And in 2 Corinthians chapter 5, and that's not what I'm preaching out of, I just want to see if it's in your version. But I want to show you how out of date your 400-year-old King James Bible is. Now, you know, we've all been told time and time again that the King James Bible is archaic and it's old and it's out of date and it's not in step with the times and you need to get something that's up to date. And so, you know, I hear that all the time, and I just want to show you how out of date your King James Bible is. 2 Corinthians chapter 5, and look at verse 7. For we walk by faith, not by sight. And there it is. That's how out of date your Bible is. Look at that verse again. Don't read it. Look at the last punctuation. How did an email smiley face from the 21st century get into a Bible 400 years ago? Guys, you know that's remarkable? It is remarkable. You know what that means? That means when the ink was still wet on your King James Bible in 1611, it was already in the 21st century. Isn't that amazing? You want a real blessing? Read that verse out of a New King James, and it doesn't have that punctuation. You know why? Because it's not up to date. All right. Well, let me... I got to get this message. Hang on. Point one. You know, guys, I could preach this whole message, or we could take a really large offering right now and I'd cut it short. Because I tell people, I'm a Baptist preacher. I cannot be bullied or intimidated, but I can be bought. All right, well, this is my outline, but don't let that get your hopes up either. I want you to open your Bibles to the book of Hosea. That's a good one. You say, Hosea chapter 4. Hosea chapter 4. That's right after Hosea chapter 3. I thought I'd try to help you there. Now, Hosea chapter 4, we're going to read one verse here. Forgive me, this cold, it was doing good until I got to the pulpit. Hosea chapter 4, and look at verse 16. It says, "For Israel slideth back as a backsliding heifer. Now the Lord will feed them as a lamb in a large place." Let's bow our heads and let's talk to the author of these words. Father, we thank you now, God, for your goodness. We thank you for your grace. We thank you, God, for your very great kindness. Lord God, I think that most of the people in this room are a little bit apprehensive, a little bit fearful for the direction our country is going, for the future of our nation. But as bad as this country's gotten, none of us were stopped tonight on the way here and told we weren't allowed to go to church. Thank you, God, that we can still go to church. God, maybe that day is coming. Maybe the day that we're not going to be allowed to come in these churches and preach and enjoy the preaching of the Word of God. Maybe those days are, maybe they're not far off. But Lord, when they come, if they come, I hope everybody here will always say, well, I went every opportunity I had when I could. So bless these people that again, Father, chose on a night that's not a church night. They chose to come to church for you. God, I pray now, Lord, for their sake and for yours, please get Sam Gipp out of your way and out of their way and speak to the heart of your people and accomplish your purpose in each life represented. In Jesus Christ's name I pray. Amen. Now we'll talk to you tonight about backsliding. And the first thing I got to do is tell you what backsliding is and is not. Basically, I got to tell you what it's not. It's not what you think it is. You know what you say? Here's what we say. You know, you get this guy out there, you see him out in the street corner, he's smoking, he's drinking. You go witness to him, and you find out that he really and truly got saved. He didn't just repeat a prayer, but he really and truly got saved, maybe 5, 6, 10 years earlier, and then he got out of church, got away from God, and they said, well, that guy's just backslidden. That guy is not backslidden. He is not backslidden. He is carnal. What is the difference between backsliding and carnal? Take a look at verse 16. It says, "For Israel slideth back as a backsliding heifer." Now, you know what that says? That says, you ever been trying to get up a hill and you were sliding back at the same time? All right, aren't you trying to make progress? Aren't you trying to get somewhere? And you slide back. That's what a backslider is. A carnal Christian, you look at, don't go there, but 1 Corinthians chapter 3, the Apostle Paul says, I had to speak to you as unto carnal, as unto babes. Nothing is more carnal than a baby. You know why? Because all they think about is themselves. I mean, a baby wants what they want. I was talking to a person, non-thinker, and they go, well, I just don't understand it. You know, a horse has a baby and it's walking by that night, and so many animals have babies and they're up and running around the same day, and Americans are so helpless. Humans are so helpless. And I said, don't you know why? And I believe this, guys. You're going to laugh when I say it, but I believe this. I said, man is wicked. We are wicked. You know that? And you know what God had to do? He had to take this little heart of a murderer and put it in a body that couldn't hurt anybody. Did you ever take anything from a little child that they shouldn't have? You know, kid picks up, finds a razor blade or something, you know, or he's about to stick his finger in a socket, and you stop him, and he goes, no, he's saying, oh, if I could get my hands around your throat. But God made the kid too weak, all right? If you have any doubt about that, if that child grows up to be 40 years old, but his brain stays too, we call that retarded. His growth has been retarded. Try to take something from him. Man, he's now about 6'2" and about 450 pounds or 250 pounds. He'll drop you, he'll dribble you around this room like a basketball. Isn't that right? So a carnal person is somebody that is given to the flesh. That guy standing on the street corner with his booze and his beer, he's saved, he's out there living in a world, he's not backslidden, he's carnal. He is not trying to achieve anything for God. You know, your pastor asked me, I've been preaching for 40 years, and he said, what is one of the things you see different? I said, one of the things I see different is that even 30 years ago, Christians who weren't right with God wanted to be right with God. A Christian who wasn't right with God knew that they ought to be right with God. There were people that they were here and they wanted to get to a higher level. Today, you got people that are here and they know they ought to be here and they say, I don't care. I don't care. Don't judge me. I'm going to stay right here. I like it where I'm at. I'm not going to do any more to get up there. They're not even trying to get anywhere. They're carnal. But you've got somebody here that, listen, he said that heifer was trying to make some progress, and you heard it said, I went up 3 feet and slid back 2. Well, isn't that progress? Come on, that's progress, is it not? I say, yeah, but wouldn't it be nice if you could just keep from sliding back that 2 feet? Yeah, it would. Now, I'm going to talk to you tonight about why you backslide, because there may be a backslider here. I didn't say there's somebody here that you go home, you got beer in the refrigerator, and you smoke out in back of the barn, and you know, you're a phony. I don't mean that at all. I mean there is somebody here that you are attempting to get on higher ground for God, and just when you seem like you're making some progress, suddenly you kind of slide back, and you're going, why am I doing that? And that's what I'm going to talk to you about. The first reason that people backslide, or think about this heifer trying to get up that hill, you know why that thing backslides? Because where it's trying to climb, it's too steep. You ever try to climb something really steep? Boy, you know, you got mountains out here, and this probably doesn't fool you, but it fools the people in the East. We look at those mountains and we think, oh man, that's just a hill. We can walk up that. Oh yeah, right. Yeah. Put in the steps. One time we were going up this side of this mountain. This is when our youngest son was just a little kid, and he got about halfway up, and he goes, man, my legs are out of breath. And that is true, brother. I've had my legs. Excuse me. I've had my legs be out of breath many a time. But guys, here's what happens. You want to get up there for God, but the way you're trying to get there, it's just too hard. It's just too steep. I don't know if you ever read anything about R.G. Letourneau. You ought to read about R.G. Letourneau. R.G. Letourneau was saved. He was not a preacher. He was a businessman. And if there was ever a man that didn't know what he couldn't do, it was R.G. Letourneau. He was the one that invented the electric wheel. Now, that doesn't sound like a big deal, but you know when you see all these earth movers, you know, and they got every one of those wheels, every one of those things, they run like a locomotive. That diesel engine isn't running those wheels. That diesel engine is generating electricity, and there's electric motor in every one of those wheels. R.G. Letourneau invented that. And then R.G. Letourneau began to build equipment. At that time, everybody riveted their equipment together. And he said, well, I'm going to weld it together. And he started welding it, and he couldn't get enough oxygen. And they said, you can't weld all your equipment together because nobody produces enough bottled oxygen for you to, at the volume you use it. He said, really? They said, yeah, that's the truth. You know what he did? He built a factory that bottled oxygen. He just didn't know what he couldn't do. And Letourneau saw about tithing. Now, tithing, I told you yesterday, is one-tenth off the top. And R.G. Letourneau started tithing. And then he said, you know, he had a lot of money coming in. And instead of giving to God 10%, he gave God 15%. And then he gave God 20%. And then he gave God 30% and 40% and 50% and 60% of his income. When R.G. Letourneau died, he was living on one-tenth of his income. He was tithing 90%. Now you say, that's what I'm going to do. Oh, no, I wouldn't advise that. You say, you don't think that's a good thing to do? Oh, I think it's a great thing. I said I wouldn't advise it because that just might be more than you could do. First, you have to understand this. One-tenth of what he was making is probably more than all of us make put together. But the fact is this, you know, you talk to people and they're not tithing, they're not doing anything for God. And if you want to, you know, if you want to say, well, I want to give more, then give more. Yeah, why don't you try giving 15% in a year? That'd be 10% that belongs to God and 5% that belongs to you. Why don't you try giving 20%? I think when we figure it all up at the end of the year, Kathy, usually we give about 25 to 30% of our income away. That's 10% tithe and 20% of our own income. And I don't know that we're going to get any higher than that. I don't know that we can afford to get any higher than that. All right? But what I'm saying is, you see something, and it's noble, and it's good, and you say, I'm going to do that. And then you find out you can't do it. You know why? Because where you climb, it was too steep. I told you last night, you ought to read about 10 pages of your Bible every day. And I told you I read 30. And I said this. I was preaching in Washington State one time, and I believe this. I said, if I'd never read through my Bible every word, if I'd never read through my Bible one time, I would not be praying and asking for the Lord to come back. A lot of people are saying, Lord, come back, right? They want the Lord to come back. I said, why do you want Him to come back and catch you having not read His Bible? So I said, if I hadn't read my Bible one time, I wouldn't be praying for the Lord to come back. And right after church, this guy came up to me and he said, I'm going to read 40 pages a day. I said, 40 pages a day. Now I told you, 30 puts you through it every 45 days, 8 times a year. 40 pages a day puts you through it in 1 month. 30 days. And I said, 40 pages a day, I said, that'll put you through it in 30 days. But I said, that's an awful lot. I said, how much are you reading right now? He said, nothing. I said, don't do it. He said, why? I said, here's what's going to happen. You're going to read 40 pages the first day. You might read 40 pages the second day. Then you'll read 30 pages the next day and say, well, I'll just read 50 tomorrow. And by the end of 2 weeks, you'll be like 970 pages behind. And then you're going to get all bummed out and just going to quit. And here's what he said. He said, nope. He said, I'm going to read 40 pages a day for 1 month, get through my Bible. And at the end of 30 days, I'm going to go back to reading 10 pages a day and start praying for the Lord to come back. I said, well, I'll pray for you. And I was back through that church a few years later. And I said, how'd that Bible program go? You know, and I was waiting to hear. He said, brother, he said, it was tough. But he said, I read 40 pages a day for 1 month. He said, I read my Bible. This guy was in his 40s, 50s. I think he was in his 50s. He said, at that age, I don't know how long he'd been saved, that was the first time he'd ever read through his Bible cover to cover. But he said, I finished my Bible in 30 days. He said, and now I'm reading 10 pages a day, and I'm praying for the Lord to come back. But guys, here's what happens. You got a noble desire. You want to reach higher ground. Don't we sing, I want to go to higher ground? But maybe where you're trying to climb is too steep. You know, this Fight On book that I had last night, I told you I read a lot of stories. And there's a lot of mountain climbing accidents. And mountains, man, climb a mountain. I have no desire to climb a mountain. But there's the most interesting mountain in Scotland. I don't know of another mountain like it in the world. It's not the very steepest or the highest or the worst, but it is a very steep mountain. And for that part of Europe, it is one of the worst. And guys climb that mountain. And men have died trying to get to the top of this mountain. And they go through all this stuff to get to the top of the mountain. And if they make it, you know what they see when they get up there? Families having picnics. People with their cars, with their rugs and their blankets, having a picnic. You know why? Because this mountain isn't like this. It's like this. If you go up this side, you've got to climb a rugged face of a mountain. But you can drive around here, park your car, and walk for about 2 miles and get to the same point this guy's getting killed to get there.
Yeah.
Now, you say, well, I just want to reach higher ground. So reach higher ground. But why don't you take it a little at a time? You know, guys, you live around the Rocky Mountains. First time I saw the Rocky Mountains, I never forgot. I'll never forget what it was like. We were coming, I think it was 94. We're up going through the Badlands. 90, I believe it is, through the Badlands. And you know what you see the mountains, and the first thing you think is, that's clouds near the horizon. Then you go, that's not clouds, that's the Rocky Mountains. But you know, when they were pulling those wagons to get into Oregon and into the West, you know what they had to find? They had to find a way to get through the hills, through the mountains. And they had to find something. Now look, it's not a coward. Well, you ought to just pull that wagon up this way. Nobody can pull that wagon up that way, pal. It's too steep. So you know what you do? You cut across. How many times have you been driving up a mountain and the road, instead of going straight up, it zigzags back and forth and back and forth and back and forth. Isn't that right? You're still getting to the top, aren't you? But you're taking it in a way that you can do it. And so I'm telling you, get some spiritual goals in your life. Say, I'm going to read this many pages. I'm going to pass out this many tracts. I'm going to give this much to God. Get some spiritual goals. But you know, if you're way down here, I wouldn't reach out there for a spiritual goal. I'd reach right here. And then reach that. I'd reach out right about here. And get to there. Then reach right out about here. And just work up there, because sometimes you're trying to do a good thing, but where you're climbing is too steep. Sometimes that animal is trying to get up there, and he's sliding back because what he's climbing on is too soft. Now, my wife and I, we had three boys. When we first went on the road, the oldest was 10, the youngest was 1. Now they're all grown and in prison. But it does help. It really does. You know the advertisements, 11 o'clock, you know where your children are? Yes, cell block D. I know they're annoying. Actually, one of them's in Denver. But I'll tell you what my boys and I used to do when we were on the road together. I just like to do this. We'd be driving along, and we'd cross a creek. And we'd have to be any place. I'd pull over, and I'd say, take off your shoes, boys. And we'd take off our shoes, we'd take off our socks, we'd roll up our pant legs, we'd just walk up a creek. I just enjoyed doing it. Four of us just sloshing up there, you know, walking up this creek. And I remember one time, we were in this creek, and we came, you know, it's just wooded, and the banks are like right there, you know. And we came around this bend. And on the outside of that bend, it must have been from here easily, as high as that roof is right there, was kind of a cliff. But it was like half a sand dune, you know. And nobody, we didn't talk. We didn't say, let's do this. It was like all four minds clicked the same thought at the same time. And all four of us took off running for that bank. Man, I mean, water was flying. We're running for that thing. We hit that. I mean, it was water and sand and mud flying through the air. And here's that thing. Boy, we get up here about halfway up. And all of a sudden, gravity overcame inertia. And we were still running, but we were going the wrong direction. And we were just running up there, just going back and going back. Now, we didn't go all the way back to the creek. Do you understand? when we stopped backsliding, we were farther up than we had been, but we weren't as far up as we'd had been. You say, what was the problem? Hey, all we had to do was get out of that thing and walk up the bank where it was solid, and we could have got to the top of that. And sometimes people try to get someplace for the Lord, but what they're trying to climb on is too soft. You know what amazes me about this book? We say that book's got all the answers, correct? And then as soon as we've got a problem, we look for a book written about it. And we ignore the Bible. Well, the Bible can't tell us what to do about this. Well, how do you know? That book is the Bible is not a good book. The Bible is the good book. This is not a good book on a list of good books. This is the book where you can put 1 through 10 or 1 through 100. And if you want to put all good books, here's what you do. You put the Bible is number 1 and everything under it you leave blank. Because there's no book like this one, all right? And that book will equip you. And the best thing about it, now sometimes we look for what I call Bible Band-Aids. And we all need a Band-Aid. I mean, look, I don't care how old you are, at some point you need a Band-Aid, right? And I got no problem with Band-Aids. But by Band-Aids, I mean, you know, you have a problem and you look for a book, chapter, and verse, and you quote it like a magic wand, you know, and I quote this verse and everything's okay. That's all right. But you know, if you'll just read that book and read that book and read that book and read that book, it will build up inside you. And this book is solid, guys. And we got people today, you know, they're trying to get on higher ground. And you know what they're using? Philosophy. Or psychology. Yeah, you know what a psychologist is? Let me tell you the difference between a preacher and a psychologist. There's not a great deal of difference. But psychology is just a cheap imitation for the Bible. If you do something wrong, and you tell a preacher what you did, he'll say you did wrong. If you do something, same thing, and tell a psychologist you did it, he'll say you did something wrong. They'll both tell you did something wrong. But the preacher will say you did it because you're wicked, and the psychologist will say you did it and it was your dad's fault. Right? The psychologist always makes it somebody else's business. Now, if you're here, you know, and you come from a family, say, well, you know, my dad didn't love me. Well, your dad probably had good taste. My dad didn't love me. My dad didn't want me, okay? I'd say it this way. I was born 2 years after my parents' last child. They had my sister. Really, they had my sister. And 2 years later, or 4 years later, had my brother. And then they said, that's it. We're going to have two. That's all. And they got rid of the babies, furniture and toys, and everything went with babies. And 2 years later, I came around. I am what was known in 1950 as a surprise. Today, I would be known as an abortion. Now stop and think about those two words. If you walked into a dark house, all of a sudden the lights came on, there were party balloons everywhere, people jumped out with pointed hats and noisemakers, what would you rather they yell? Yeah. Abortion! I mean, it just doesn't ring. Surprise is a better word, don't you think? And so my parents almost adopted me out of the family. They really did. They almost got rid of me, and they didn't. But here's the problem. When I was 14 years old, I stole my first car. When I was 14 years old, I spent my first night in jail. When I was 16 years old, me and four friends of mine went up to the Lincoln Mercury dealership. We hotwired two brand new 66 Comet 390 4-speed, 335 horse Comet GTs, and we stole them. And I got busted for two counts of grand theft auto. And when they, now I tell people this, you say, are you bad? No, not bad at all. I was just born 15 years too early. I was. See, when they asked me why I stole them cars, you know what I said? Because I'm a crook. Now, if I'd have been born 15 years later, I'd have said, my dad doesn't love me. I'm just calling out, Daddy. Man, they'd put my dad in jail. Do you know that? I heard this, this made me sick. Five high school kids, some years ago in Pennsylvania, a little town, broke into this house, 71-year-old man, 70-year-old woman, tied him up in chairs facing each other, and let him watch while they killed her, then they killed him. Now, you ready for this? When their principal found out, this guy says, well, they must have really been yelling out for help, calling out for help to do something like that. Oh, you give me them boys. They'll find out about calling out for help. All right? But here's what it is. You can blame your dad just so much. In fact, let me say this. If your dad is your problem, I wouldn't be like this. My dad made me this way. All right, let's carry that equation a little farther. Your dad was okay. Who messed him up? His dad. So lay off your old man. It was your stinking grandfather. Because he messed up your dad, and he messed you up. But wait a minute. Who messed up your grandfather? That's right, your great-grandfather. You probably didn't even know him. Aren't you glad? Because if you get a hold of him for what he did to your grandfather, because what he did to your dad, because what he did to you. Now, if you go back far enough, you end up in the garden, and this is true, okay? I mean, if you get back to Adam, you could actually blame him for something. Let me ask you a question. If you're going to spend the rest of your life down at the interstate on-ramp with a piece of cardboard and a black magic marker saying, please help, or we'll work for food or whatever, you can blame your dad, you can blame your mom, you can blame the government, you can blame anybody you want, but you're still the one at the end of the on-ramp, aren't you? And you try to climb with psychology, You know, you read this, I read one time these four temperaments. Sanguine. I know what a sanguine is. It's a little black and white bird, walks like this. Phlegmatic, no clutch. Caloric, I think that's a gas range. And there's another one in there. Melancholy. Yeah, yeah. Here's what you do. You read, I'm going to challenge you. You read about those four temperaments. And I'm going to tell you what you're going to do. You're going to find yourself in all four. Really, you will. You'll find something about you in all four. So you'll find which one the majority of you is in or the one you want to be. And then you go, yeah, that's me. And then you'll begin to take on the traits that you didn't have before. Man, I have talked to people, well, you know, I'm just melancholy. Well, knock it off. Man, I am up to here with people. And can I say this on to you men? Now, forgive me, ladies, but man, it's one thing for a lady to whine, but when a man does.
Right!
Man, I mean, when I get grown men, I get men come up and they go, well, I try to read my Bible. If I try to read 10 pages, I get a headache. What should I do? I say, well, read it with a headache. Yeah, read it with a headache. Guys, I get headaches last. The worst headache I ever had lasted 5.5 months. I would dream about pain. And every day I got up and I read my 30 pages. Don't come up here and play your stinking violin and tell everybody how rough life is.
Amen.
And you get that psychology. You know what it does? I'll tell you what it does.
Right.
You'll find a level where you can stop and you'll stop right there. You'll never go another foot. You'll never go any farther. You know what your problem is? You're trying to get way up there where your climb is too soft. And that psychology and that psychiatry and music. Now look, I'm all for music. But let me tell you what I believe. I believe in the call to preach. I don't believe in the call to do anything else. I believe in the call to preach. Now, I think that call manifests itself in three ways. As a missionary, I think the missionaries are the special forces of the gospel. I think those guys, you know what it is to pastor? You've got three pastors here. You know what it is to pastor? Here's what happens. These pastors go out, they win some couple to the Lord, they get this couple saved, they get their daughter from getting divorced, they get their son out of jail and off drugs, and that couple says, oh, preacher, man, you've just been such a blessing, we'll just be behind you all of our life. And they go to church, and then after about 3 years, they get mad at him, they leave, they take five families with them, and they badmouth him all over town. I was talking to a young pastor, he was in a little town, not a big city, it was a little town, everybody knew everybody. And this older man in his church got mad about something he said. And you know, like I said the other night, there's his side, her side, and the truth. Oh, no, it wasn't even that this guy was looking at this through his eyes. He was making stuff up he knew wasn't true. He's just outright lying about this preacher. And one day this preacher saw him downtown. He says, hey, he says, I got to talk to you for a second. He said, sure. He said, I was talking to so-and-so. And they said, you said that I did this. He goes, yeah, I said that. He goes, but he said, nothing like that ever happened. It's not even like you misunderstood. I mean, that's just a lie. He goes, yeah. He goes, and if you think that's bad, wait till you see the next one I tell. You ready for this? That man was the preacher's dad. Man, that'd tear your heart up. I'm an evangelist. Man, evangelism, I don't do that. Man, if I make you mad, you don't have to leave. I will. I will, brother. I mean, Wednesday night, we're going to gear up and get out, run through the mountains, pal. We're out of here, all right? I say, I'll make you happy if I got to leave town to do it. Evangelism, you're always tired. Evangelism, I'll be honest, guys, it'd be nice to have a house. It really would. You really can't ever really get well very well. And that's it. But it's not hard on our heart. These preachers, man, that when you win somebody to the Lord and they tear your heart up, that is tough. Now take that pastoring and put it in another country, in another culture, with another language. I think the call to preach manifests itself as a missionary, as a pastor, as an evangelist. I got the easiest job there is. All I need what they say, seven sermons on a fast car. I got it. I like fried chicken too. But but here's the thing. I don't believe anything beyond that. Now look, if you want to do puppets for God, you do puppets for God, okay? Really, I mean, if you want to do puppets for God, do it. I don't believe God calls people to do puppets for God. I don't believe God calls people to cut out paper dolls for God and everything else for God. And I'm sorry, I'm just not really convinced of all this music stuff. Well, I'm just going to, God wants me to sing for Him. I've heard some of them folks, I don't think it is God. Man, we were at a church in Arkansas. You know, every church got somebody who can't sing. This one had somebody, if they had somebody that could sing, we never found them. I can't prove this, but somewhere in their church covenant, it says you cannot join here if you can carry a tune. When they got four people up there, you know how you sing four parts? Nobody sang the melody. They sang four different tunes. I mean, it was awful. Every night when we go to that church, they give us a couple dozen eggs. It wasn't until they started singing. We thought we were supposed to eat them. Then we heard them singing. We realized what they were for. That's what I did first time I heard them sing, Sam. Man, I was up there singing one time, and I told my wife, I said, God knows everything. And I said, those people are hitting notes He's never heard. But you know, you get these people, and they get up there, and they go, well, I'm just going to sing for Jesus. Look, sing for Jesus. But that music isn't going to get you through it. And you can, you know, you can listen to your iPod and Walkman and everything else and listen to all the nice music you want. I can't get over it. I tell people to read their Bible and they say, well, I don't have time. Hey, you can read 10 pages in half an hour. Some of you can't do it because it takes you half an hour to pick which song you want to listen to while you read your Bible. Well, I just got to have music for this and music for that. Why don't you just shut it all down? Maybe where you're trying to climb is too soft. Maybe it's just too soft. I'll tell you what used to happen. We were in Kansas, my wife and I and the boys, and we're out in the prairie. Two most unique things we did. First off, we're out in the prairie in the middle of the desert. You know what we were doing? Picking up shark's teeth. Picking shark's teeth off the desert. And we were up on the top of a mountain in Montana looking at a wall like that wall right there, a stone, solid stone wall. And the whole thing was seashell fossils. I don't know who took them up there. Yeah. But out in Kansas, we're picking up these shark's teeth, and we see two ruts in the prairie, and they just go on. And that was the old trail that went out to Oregon. Still there. The ruts are still there. You know what happened? Those people would get on those wagons, you know, it's Studebaker. Studebaker, before they made cars, they made wagons. A lot of those old Conestoga wagons were Studebakers. And Studebaker wagon, you know, they get that thing and they put everything in there that they could. And they start across that prairie. Now, guys, you know what? This area is an amazing area because you're at the foot of the Rockies on the west. And on the east, it's almost pool table flat. I mean, I've come across Kansas and south of North Dakota. They call that the Great Plains. I say it this way. If you shot a gun, the bullet would skid to a stop. There's nothing for it to hit. It'd just go out until it just dropped. It's just flat as a pool table. Man, you stand in Denver, you look east and it's flat. You look west and you can't even see the rise. You've got to look like this because you've got the mountains. And you know it was all easy pulling when they had all that stuff in that wagon until they had to start across those Rockies. They start across those Rockies. Come on, guys. If you go through 70, your car has to work going up the hills. And you got what? 300 horsepower? Try it with 2 horsepower. And here's what would happen. They get up there, you know, and that wagon master would come back there. He'd have them all stop for a while, and he'd say, now, folks, he'd usually get the men. And he'd say, now, here's what I want you men to do. He said, I want you to go talk to your wife. And he said, tell her to go through that inventory of all those things in the wagon that she's got and decide what she really wants to keep. Because she's not taking everything in that wagon across these mountains. And here's what I've heard. I've heard that in some cases, they could literally follow the trail, the Oregon Trail across the prairie up through the Rockies, by following the trail of things people had to throw out of their wagons. I mean, Grandma's China. I'm never getting rid of Grandma's China. You are if you don't want to winter this side of the Rockies. Yeah, I mean, there goes the piano, and there goes the library, and there goes this, and there goes that. You know what the problem was? You know what? They'd get up, and then they'd come back, and they'd get up, and they'd come back. You know what the problem was? Hey, they're trying to get someplace good. They had a good goal, did they not? You know what the problem was? Taking too much with them. Boy, if we are trying to serve God and not take everything with us, I don't know who else is. I love my country, right? I'm not critical of Americans, but I am intrigued by Americans and I am entertained by Americans. Let me tell you what. So, I mean, this is probably true of everybody here. Now, I think I was talking to somebody here. You guys got basements, right? Isn't that good? Isn't that good to have a basement? You know, there's some states they don't have a basement. I feel sorry for them. I think you ought to tell Obama. He'll probably give everybody a basement. Because, now look, we live in a motorhome. And there's no basement, there's no garage, there's no attic. I would love to go to yard sales, but you know what I'd buy? The yard. And if you got a basement, you can put stuff in the basement for storage. You can put stuff in the garage for storage. And you can put stuff in the attic for storage. And if you don't have that enough, are you ready for this? We rent places to store stuff. You know, a couple of years ago, we were flying over to New Guinea, and Kathy was with me, and missionary, you know, I was going to be preaching about two or three villages, and in one village, the missionary's wife asked Kathy to speak to the women. Now, we're talking third world, guys. No, they don't have electric. They don't have running water. They don't have chimneys in their houses. It's literally those rattan walls with grass roof, and the entire inside of the house is like a chimney. It's bright, shiny, black creosote because they light a fire, and the smoke just drifts up through the grass. And we're on our way over, we're on the plane, and Kathy goes, I don't know what I should say to those women. I said, babe, I said, women are the same all over the world. I said, just get up there and share your favorite microwave recipes and tell them, don't overuse your cell phone minutes.
Yeah.
We were visiting with a good Christian home, good Christian family. They're not bad people. And they got this concrete goose. You know, some people have a concrete whatever. And right on the porch, you got this little concrete goose. And they dress it for the season. So you know, come, I guess it probably had Halloween stuff on, and then they're going to get Thanksgiving stuff, and then they're going to get Christmas stuff. And this lady was talking to Kathy, and she had a real crisis. She said, you know, it's just getting so hard to find clothes for my goose. And here's what I thought. Now, I don't think, I thought, try to explain that to some woman in New Guinea. Where do you find clothes for your geese? But they get away from you. You're out of your mind. Now, here's what I'm telling you. You got an attic, basement, garage, storage area. I wouldn't doubt, now not the young people, but I wouldn't doubt the older folks here. Everybody here, you've all done this. You took something, you put it in a box, you put it in your attic, your basement, your garage, or a storage area. And you will never see it again in your life. You will die. I'm telling you, you're going to die and never open that box again. But at least you got it! And you know what I see? I see God calling some people. And boy, we have got a generation that they got to have everything. Look, I'm not going to tell you, I didn't have it as tough as my parents had it. But Kathy and I, you know, we had the sectional couch that was in my uncle's basement for 12 years. When you sat down on this couch, it was brief. Because all the springs were on attack mode. And you'd go, whoa! And if you did find a place that didn't stab you, it'd been in that basement so long, but you could just feel your clothes getting wet from that couch. We had that thing for about 4 years till we could scare up enough money to buy a couch. And then we finally got a washer. We got a freezer. But, man, I talk to young couples now, and they're getting married. And they go, well, we just came from the house, and the guys are bringing the new carpet, and they're delivering all the new appliances. But we got it all, guys. We've got it all. And here's the problem. Then God calls one of those people and says, I want you to go to the mission field. And they inventory their kingdom. And they go, I'm not giving this up. Well, I got bad news for you guys. You all want to work. You want to reach something higher. You can't take everything with you. I don't mean you can't take it with you when you die. You can't even take it all with you if you're going to live for God. You know, I used to do body work. Man, I love doing body work. Had some body shop tools and things like that. We went on the road. I stored all this stuff. And And it was stored for about a year and a half. And I had an old truck. And I called this guy in my church up in New York that I pastored, and I said, "Look, brother," I said, "I'm never going to use them tools again." He wanted my tools. I said, "Here's what I want you to do. Come down and get that truck, get those tools. I don't even know what's in there. Inventory, just send me a check." To this moment, when I think about getting rid of those tools, I still hate getting rid of those tools. But they would have been there for 28 years. They wouldn't be any good anyway. And I'm going to tell you something, guys. If I came off the road now with this neck, if I used a vibrating sander, my head would fall off. And what I'm telling you is, we want to serve God, but we want to take everything with us. Now, let me tell you where you live, and I believe this. You live in Disney World. I'm not telling you for your sake. That is what the entire world thinks. From Atlantic to Pacific, from Canada to Mexico, they look at this whole country as Disneyland. This whole place is just one big vacation wonderland. They come over here, they can't believe our gas is so cheap. They can't believe our food is so cheap, and you get so much of it, and it tastes better than theirs. Don't buy that stuff about their food's better. Nobody's got better food than us. Nobody's got better roads than us. Nobody's got better service than us. And I talk to those people, I don't care what country it is, whether it's a third world, or whether it's a first world, whether it's a European nation, and if they've been over here, I just did this the other day. I'm trying to think of what country that guy was from. But I just did this the other day, and it happened again. Every single time, without exception. If they've been over to this country, they can see the Grand Canyon, they can see the Statue of Liberty, they can see all that stuff. And I'll say, "What impressed you the most about my country?" You know what they say every time? The people. Americans are so nice. Now you're sitting there going, "Oh, they didn't see the Americans, I see." You haven't seen the other people they see. Brother, Americans are good people. They really are. And here's what I believe, guys. Now look, I've never preached this because I don't believe this. I've never preached because we're Christians. We've got to live up on a mountain in an earth house with no water, no electric, and you got to wear burlap, and you got to eat hamburger helper off of styrofoam plates. You can live in a nice house and have carpet. You can have you can eat steak off China. I say this. We can enjoy 90% of what this country offers us. You just don't have to sell out your soul for the last 10%. Now, personally, that excites me. Man, that excites me. I am telling you. Guys, you people, you know some of you, you probably watch TV and you're down on fast food. Well, you know that's factory food. If you would go to some of the countries I've been to, when you got off the plane in this country, you would lick the floor of McDonald's. But you have not been there till the lizards are chasing the cockroaches across you in your sleep. You haven't lived until you hear a bat right outside your room and its wingspan is 2 feet. And guys, we've got so much here. And I just don't have to do everything they tell me I have to do. Like I was telling you about the movies. I just don't have to have everything, all right? But you know what the mantra is of Christians today? It's not fair. It is not fair to tell me that I have to give up anything for God.
Right.
That's exactly what this guy on this internet's talking about. Well, religion says you can't, and Jesus says you can. I got news for you. If you love Jesus, there's some things you can't do.
Right.
That's just a fact. There's some things, and you read that book. You know what these guys, they don't read that Bible. They're scared to death to read that Bible. You know why? Because they find out, not only does that Bible not say what they believe, but they find out that the Jesus that they're talking about ain't the Jesus of that Bible.
That's right.
And so ignorance is bliss, and they'd like to be blizzards, all right? But I'm telling you something, guys. You can't take everything with you if you're going to serve God. Man, I knew this guy. He was a banker. And he was young, and he was just beginning his career. And God called him to the mission field of the Arctic. And that guy walked away from that job. That guy's got, I think, 10 kids. I preached for him. Brother, the Arctic is the third world. I've been in third world nations that are nicer places than the Arctic. We go up in the Arctic villages and it is rough. And that guy, he said one time he was walking, he almost died. You know this building right here? I guess, the main shopping center? His house was about that far from his church. And he said, I walked out and it was 60 below zero. Not wind chill, guys. 60 below zero. And he said, I had plenty of clothes on. He said, I just forgot to cover my mouth. And he said, I got 20 feet from the door of the church and I breathed in and it seared me and I went down. Now, nobody knows. They think he's in the church. And he said, I'm going to die. I'll be dead in 5 minutes. I will be a solid block of ice, because I'll be dead long before they come up looking for me. And this guy crawled. He crawled into the church to save his life. This guy's a banker, man. He could have stayed with his job. He could have it good. But he wanted to get someplace. You know what he found out? He found, if I'm going to reach something for God, I just can't take everything with me. Now, I'm not telling everybody here that you're called to the mission field, that you've got to get rid of all your stuff. I'm not telling you you can't have a house. I'm telling you, have a house, have nice things, but you don't have to have every single toy. You don't have to sell your soul to pleasure. You know what this lost world believes? They believe that life is all about pleasure. You know what the saved world believes? That life is all about pleasure. We think the same thing. We want the same thing. They want a party. We want a party. The world, you know, I know you don't want to go to some dope, sex, booze party. I know that. That's what the world wants. No, you just want to go to a tailgate. Can't we just sit around, grill burgers and drink Diet Coke and talk about the Lord? Yeah. You'd rather do that. Then the preacher says, let's go knock on some doors and pass some gospel tracts and win somebody to Christ. You go, well, I'm not going to do that, preacher. You're messing up my party. Guys, you can't take it all with you. There might be somebody, you say, well, I'm going to make it over that mountain. Nobody makes it over that mountain with everything. You get about halfway up that and winter will catch you and you'll die in that snow. You guys know what those mountains are like. I mean, you know what those mountains are like in winter probably better than those folks back in Ohio where I'm from. Isn't that true? And those people had to shed some of the things that they had so they could get on the other side. You ready for this? So they could get to a better place. And they did go to a better place. They just couldn't take everything with them. One last thing. You know, here, when they were climbing these mountains, when they were taking their wagons over, they would take a place that wasn't too steep and it wasn't too soft. And after they got rid of every bit of extra weight that they could, there'd be this one thing that happened. They'd be getting up there and maybe a wheel gets stuck in a rock. And then those oxen or those horses just couldn't pull that wagon out of there. And when everybody saw that, you know what they'd do? They'd all come down there, and the men would get behind that wagon, and somebody maybe put their team in front of that wagon, and they'd give that guy a push, or they'd give him a pull. They got him out of the hole. You know what that guy had to do? He had to be humble enough to admit, I need a little help to get to the top. I was preaching in this church in Ohio, and when you pulled into the parking lot, the front door of the church was what was right at grade level. And then starting right there, the grade fell away so that the back of the church, grade level, you came out the basement door. All right? So it'd be like the ground up there, that'd be the front of the church. And then go down. And I asked this preacher. Now, at that time, I had this Ford van. It had a 460, but it was only two-wheel drive. And we were pulling a 35-foot trailer. And I said, where am I going to park this week? And he said, behind the church. Now, this is grass. It's grass down there across the back and around and up the other side. And I said, brother, I said, is that ground solid enough? He goes, oh, yeah. He said, you can't see it, but he said, there's an old gravel driveway all the way around, a U-shaped driveway all the way around. There's rock underneath that grass. There was rock underneath that grass, about 10 feet. Brother, I started over this hill, and I'm committed now. And I realize, I mean, we're just pushing. I'm already 6 inches in the ground. And I got to make it 90 degrees. And so I made it 90 degrees, and that's where we stopped. And as soon as I turned the tire, I stopped. So I broke it loose, fought my way to get my van out of there. And I asked this guy, I said, this was a Saturday, and it was a Sunday through Friday meeting. And I said, you got anybody in your church got a four-wheel drive truck? He goes, yeah, I got a guy. I said, have him here next Saturday. Oh, he says, it's a little Toyota. He said, it'll never pull you out. I said, I don't need him to pull me out. I just need him to hook to me and give me a little tug. I know he can't pull me out. But I know I'm not getting out of here without a little tug. I said, have him here Saturday. So Saturday came, and and Nathan. Nathan would always spot me on the hitch. And I told him, I said, Nate, I said, we got to get this. I've got to back up. Here's the hitch. I've got to put that ball right underneath that hitch the first time because I can't move this thing. Old Nate would put me, he spotted me right on there. Man, I dropped that hitch. I left my sway bars off, so I had all my traction down. And I told this guy, guys, get this Toyota truck, man. I mean, it's this far off the ground. He's got these great big tires. I think it had 90 horsepower, and 85 of it was just to turn the wheels, you know. And he says, what do you want me to do? I said, just sit there. I said, if I can get this out, I'll get it out. But I said, if I spin a tire, I'm going to call you. So, it didn't even hunch up. It wasn't even solid enough to get any kind of a bite, man. Wheels turned that fast. So I called this kid down with this Toyota. He had him a chain, you know, and he hooked to the front bumper of my Ford. We hooked to the front bumper of his Toyota, and he's backing up. And he started pulling me. Now, I'm going to tell you something. That Toyota, look, that was a 460 cubic inch V8 engine, my Ford. I think his whole four-cylinder was one of my cylinders. If that Ford ain't pulling it, that stinking little Toyota ain't pulling it. You understand? But the two of us together, we can do something. And he started pulling. We came around that corner. Well, the funniest thing was, he'd get up there, and all of a sudden, all four of them tires would lose traction. He's sitting there going, zoo, 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 and the truck ain't moving, but I caught traction. And I'm still coming. He's going, zoo, zoo, zoo. That Ford's going, whoa. You say, what are you going to do? I'm going to push that Toyota. That's what I'm going to do. About that time, that Toyota saw that Ford coming, man, it put another gear in it, back up the hill it went. But he pulled me out. Now, could you imagine if I said this? If that preacher said, you need some help getting out of there. I got a guy's got a Toyota. He'll pull you out. I said, there ain't no Toyota going to hook to my Ford. Guys, I'd still be behind that church. I still would. You understand? Let me tell you what happens to everybody. Everybody gets some point in their life. You know, maybe you're worn out. Maybe you're tired, burn out, call it what you want. Maybe just sick. I'm talking about sick. Maybe tired. Maybe it's just, I can handle this, and I can handle this, and I can handle this. But when all three hit, I can't handle all three. You understand? And you just get to a point where you say, I don't know if I can make it. You know what you need to do? You need to get somebody to give you a pull, or somebody to give you a push. Now, I know who gives the push. I know who the pusher is. You know who it is? Preacher. Preachers give you a push. You know why that is? Two reasons. Number one, aren't they the ones who are always saying, you got to push harder, you got to go farther, you're not doing enough? Isn't a preacher pushy? Right? But wait a second. Now, let me explain this to you. How many of you men ever pushed a car in the mud? What happens to you? Oh, man, you get spray painted. Isn't that what happens to the pastor? He pushes you and gets you out of the ditch, and all you do is sling mud on him. And that is the truth. And so maybe there's a time you just need to call up your preacher and say, preacher, I don't know if I'm going to make it. I need a little help tonight. Give me a push. Maybe you just need a friend. And guys, you know, I'm afraid. I'm afraid of what Christianity's like. I'm afraid we all got to be so holy. We all got to be so on such high ground that we can't reach around and grab a hold of somebody and give them a little pull. Here's how I see life. I see life like a staircase, okay? And everybody's trying, everybody's down here, and there's like 10 steps, and we're all trying to reach up here. Now, can we be honest enough to admit some folks got different skills and different abilities than others? And some folks, they just climb them steps easier, okay? What if you could climb them steps real good? You got the majority of people down here, and you get up step one, and a bunch of, you know, maybe a quarter of them get up, maybe half of them get up step two, and about half of that gets up to step three. But it starts leaning out there. But you got no problem, man. You're already up at step eight. And the closest one's back here at step five. Come on, guys, what's the matter? Well, what are you doing? All you're doing is showing what you can do, aren't you? What if you didn't go quite so high? What if you just got up there about step four, and then turn around and grab some of those guys and said, come on, let me help you up here. And we get enough of you guys up here on step four. You turn around and help those guys up. And I'll work my way up step five. I'll help some of you guys up. And you know, sometimes you get through life, you know, maybe it's the death of somebody you love, maybe it's a tragedy of some kind. Don't be too proud to call up a friend and say, I don't think I'm going to make it tonight. You know why most people won't do that? Because before dawn, the person they called would put that all over Facebook and Twitter. Oh, and so-and-so even called me last night. They said they're not going to make it. They're just not the Christian I thought they were. Yeah, and apparently you're not the Christian they thought you were either. You know what you need to do, guys? You know, there ought to be somebody. There ought to be somebody serving God today. That their testimony is, I wouldn't be here now if it wasn't for, and they use your name to finish that sentence. Is there anybody serving God right now that they could say, if it wasn't for, and then said your name, I wouldn't be in church today? Guys, it's easy to run them off. You understand? It is easy when somebody's face down in the mud. It's easy to jump on their back. I had a man in my church. And now let me tell you, there's two different kinds of men. They're bad men. And a bad man's a bad man. No matter what you do for him, he's a bad man. And then there's a good man just do something stupid. Boy, did I tell you, a good man would do something stupid. This was a good man. Boy, he did something stupid. And I helped him through it. I helped him through it when probably he didn't deserve it. Now, he'd been some problems to me, but he was trying. And I helped him through this. You say, how bad was it? Well, he never went to prison. You say, you think he belonged in prison? That guy didn't belong in prison. No. He wasn't a criminal. He's just stupid. I mean, really, guys, I mean, stupid is one thing, but it ought not to be against the law. And I'm helping this guy, and one day he said this. He said, preacher, he said, what are you doing here? I said, what do you mean? He said, what are you doing helping me? He said, if you let me alone, I would be in jail, and I'd be out of your church, and I'd be out of your hair, and I wouldn't be a grief to you anymore. Why are you here? Why are you helping me? And I told him this. This has always been my policy. I said, my policy is this, brother. I said, when you're face down in the mud, look, we've all had our brethren, for one reason or another, face down in the mud. That is not the time to put on our football spikes and clean them in their back. And I said, I'm not cleaning my football spikes in your back. And I said, here's what I'll do. I said, I will pick you up. And I said, I will put my arm around your waist, and I will put your arm around my neck. And I said, I will carry you until you can go yourself. And you know something? He got his feet under him. He got his feet under him, and he went on doing pretty good for God. But he had that one time in his life when he needed somebody. Guys, sometimes there's just one time. And I'm not saying somebody's going to kill themselves that night. I mean, but we all have somebody, and they're down. They're down. And anybody can jump on their back and say, I had a preacher. Listen, my dad and mom were Roman Catholics, and they got saved 12 years after I got saved. I led my dad to the Lord, and my wife led my mom to the Lord on the same night. And guess who was preaching in my church that night? That banker that got called to the Arctic. He was preaching that night. And I led my dad and my mom to the Lord 12 years after I got saved. I got a preacher friend. He's in Pennsylvania, Catholic, just like me. Parents Catholic. When he was saved 12 years, his dad died, went to hell. Didn't get saved. I called him up. I said, how you doing? He said, I'm as backslid as hell. Now, I know what you just said. I don't think a preacher ought to shit and talk like that. Well, neither do I. But his dad just went to hell and he's still there. What am I supposed to do? Call every preacher? Do you know what so-and-so said when I called him? Isn't that what we do? Man, I talked to him for a while. I scrounged around in my wallet. Remember that $100 I had for that other preacher? All I had was 40 bucks. So I had $40 to my name. I threw it in an envelope. And I said, brother, take this money and take your wife out. He still has that letter. He would stand behind that pulpit tonight. You know what he'd tell you? I'm in the ministry because of that phone call and that letter. What I'm telling you is that in our Christian life, sometimes we're going to need some help. Sometimes we're going to need somebody to give us a push or give us a tug, give us a pull. But our friends are sometimes going to need a push and need a pull. Let's be their friend. Man, we're in this age now. You know, listen, there was a day in this world when you could make a mistake. You make a mistake now, it's on the internet by sundown. And you know who put it on there? Their best friend. Why don't you help them through and then never mention it again? I have helped some people, and when I see them, and I see them, every time I see them, to this day I've never yet said, how did that turn out? I helped them when they needed help, and it was so embarrassing for them, I won't even broach the subject again. But they're in church. They're serving the Lord. You say, they just needed somebody to give them a little tug. I'd like you to stand with your heads bowed. Where are you tonight? I hope you're not carnal. I don't mind if you're backslidden. If you're backsliding, that means you're trying to get up on higher ground. You're just having some problems. And what is your problem? Maybe you got a good goal, but the way you're trying to get up there, it's just a little too steep. It's a little beyond your reach. Maybe you need to be more reasonable and realistic and lower your sights a little bit. Get a goal you can attain and then get another goal and take this piece at a time. Get up there a little at a time. Maybe where you're trying to climb is too steep. Maybe where you're trying to climb is too soft. Oh, you've got every Christian shrink book that there is. Those are only good if you own a wood burner. You don't need those. You got the greatest book on the planet, written by God Himself. Why would you need something else? I told people to read 10 pages. One guy, he said, well, I've got your books. And he said, now you got me reading 10 pages. I don't have time to read your books. I said, listen, if all you ever read is the Bible, I said, you're going to get everything you need. You don't need my books. You don't need anybody's books. You need God's book. Maybe I'm talking to somebody and your heart's desire is to do something for God, but you just refuse to give up anything for Him. I'm telling you, that's not going to work. I'm not telling you got to wander the streets in sandals and a robe and, you know, not two nickels to rub together and sleep under the bushes in the dew. No, I'm not telling you got to do that. But I'm telling you, you cannot have your heart in that world and reach the top. Maybe I'm talking to somebody tonight. You just need to shed some of your pride. Tell your pastor, preacher, I need a little push. Maybe you need to call a friend and say, could you give me a little tug, give me a little pull? Maybe you got a friend like that, and they need to find out what a good friend they've got in you. I'm going to have a word of prayer, guys. Then the piano's going to play. Maybe you need to come down here and talk to God about some things. That's what church is about. Listen, remember this. We come to church and we say this, I hope God will speak to me. But the thing is that if God speaks to you, it's a two-way street. Then you have to speak to Him. And so maybe before we leave here, you can do business with Him.